Yay! Welcome, everybody, to Monsters Lounge. We are an awesome podcast. That's just how I'm going to describe us from now on. I'm Jenny.
I'm Tressa. Hello.
Well, it would be Tressa if I wasn't talking over her right now, but that's all right.
It's fine.
Tressa.
Yeah.
We have a really exciting show tonight. I know I say that every single week, but we've been killing it with these guests.
They're so great. Awesome.
Especially these two guys. We were chatting a little bit backstage, and they are delightful.
So delightful.
So delightful. Our guests tonight are Dan Baldwin and George Sewell. And Dan is a professional writer. He is often a ghostwriter. For other professionals, he has written and co-written or ghosted more than 60 books and has won numerous local, regional, and national awards. He is a certified clinical hypnotherapist, plays the Native American flute, which I would like to hear, by the way, and is an expert pendulum dowser, using it to help find missing persons for more than 20 years. Fascinating. George Sewell has a lifelong interest and study of the paranormal and UFO phenomenon. He is the author of Habits, Patterns, and Thoughts That Go Bump in the Night, A Gnome, A Candle, and Me. As a playwright, he has written for all sorts of community, student, all sorts of theater, which is really impressive.
Yeah.
I'm always impressed by playwrights, just because I can't write that way at all. For which he was awarded the Louisiana Division of the Arts Fellowship in Theater. He is a longtime member of MUFON. Oh, I was like a MUFON member.
Of course.
And served as Assistant State Director of Louisiana in the 1990s. He has graduate degrees in drama, communications, and counseling. Vocationally, he is retired as a counselor, program manager, and administrator in the field of addictive disorders. And he lives in Bossier City.
What's his address?
Louisiana. His address is 123 None of Your Business.
Oh, rude.
Oh, rude. So please help me welcome Dan and George.
Hello.
This is
Hello, Dan.
Dan
and George.
George.
Fantastic.
All right. First of all, if you're listening to this audio, both gentlemen have shown up in fantastic hats, and I'm such a big fan of hats. So already I'm off to a great start. Also, you guys have, between the two of you, so much life and things that you've been doing.
So much life. That's weird.
Yeah. Well. And a lot of books, too, which, by the way, we're going to post the websites. So if I have missed anything, you
check
can go
the show
check
notes.
Out.
They'll be there.
Yeah, they'll be there for sure. So one of the coolest things that we have learned about you guys is that you have used pendulum dowsing to come and investigate contact with UFO phenomena.
That is correct.
What where that began is there was a Shreveport woman who had a lifetime history of encounters with what we would term extraterrestrials, abductions. I don't like that word, but nonetheless, there were instances of her being literally physically and astrally removed for whatever reasons. And she had a friend who was aware of my interest, longtime interest in the field, in particular that I was involved with Mutual UFO Network as assistant state director for a while. And so she suggested to this lady, Lindsay, that you might want to call George. I mean, he seems to know something about this. Maybe he can, you know, help you out. And that led to a call from Lindsay one night. And for 2 hours, I got to listen to Lindsay's incredible history, beginning around the age of 3 and up to the present time. And also during this time, Dan was frequently in Shreveport-Bossier area, Louisiana, doing pendulum dowsing, investigating the pendulum as a communication device for the dearly departed and getting information from them as to what it's like for them in their current status. And I began thinking, whoa, that pendulum, I've never encountered any sort of research, especially in the UFO field, of using the pendulum. And I, well, damn, Dan, Lindsay has this incredible lifetime of experiences. She wants to know what's going on. Let's use the pendulum and see if we can find some answers for her. So we did that for about 2 years, and the result was the book Paranormal Pendulum 3, the Lindsay Higgins story.
What exactly is the pendulum picking up on when you use it for this sort of investigation?
Yeah, let me. I'll give you the 50-cent tour. Mm-hmm. This is a pendulum. It's nothing more than a weight on a string. That's all it is. It's a tool. You ask a question. You have to ask yes or no questions. And a swing to the right would be a yes, and then a swing to the left would be a no. And then a swing back and forth would mean primarily you need to rephrase the question, mm-hmm. or
I don't want to answer.
I don't want to answer. But in essence, the way it works is while your conscious mind is fixated upon the rock on the string, mm-hmm. your subconscious mind is freed up, and your subconscious mind gets into contact with the spirit world or the UFO inhabitants or the Akashic records, however mm-hmm. you want to define the big, nice pink thing that's out there,
mm-hmm.
Your God, yeah, whatever. You get in contact with that. The information is downloaded into your subconscious. Your subconscious moves your fingers. And that's how it, you ask the question, and then the answer is downloaded, and your subconscious manipulates your fingertips. There's nothing special, nothing magic about the rock on a string at all. It's just a tool. The quote magic happens between your subconscious and a higher power.
I don't know why I thought it was actually. So here's my level of understanding about pendulum dowsing is for some reason I had this mental image of like the pendulum hanging, but then like ghosts or spirit or something like batting at it, like a moving it. That is completely not what it is.
I mean, a spirit could conceivably bat at it, but actually the motion is controlled by your fingers.
Oh, okay.
Your fingertips at the direction of your subconscious mind. There's no magic in the pendulum whatsoever. It's a weight. That's all it is.
Yeah.
I've used a rock, plastic, dirt clods. Just as long nails. As long as it's a weight on a string, you can pendulum dowsing. Anybody who wants to douse with a pendulum can pick up the technique in about 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. But I have a couple of books on the subject if they want to get a little deeper into it. But you can pick up the technique in about 5 minutes. I mean, if you can hold a rock on a string, you can pendulum dowse. The skill comes in in training your mind to be completely unfocused and clear, because you can make the answer you want to get. In other words, am I going to win the lottery this weekend? Oh, yeah. And, I need to point out something real quick. If anybody out there is interested in pendulum dowsing, the question you ask is key. And I need to give you an example of why that is important. Mm-hmm. When I was looking for missing persons early on, I would get incredibly accurate information using the dowsing tool where the person was, what the person was doing, where the person could be found, like what they were wearing, who they were with, that sort of thing. Just very detailed information. And I would begin by asking, is this person alive? That's a key question. I would always get a yes. My answers were always consistent with the information we gathered after we found the person, and the person would inevitably would be deceased by the time I had done the reading. So it bothered me because this kept happening. I get that the person is alive, but the person is dead by the time I'm doing the reading, yet I'm getting all this accurate information. What's wrong? And then the light bulb finally went off. People don't die.
Yeah, we're energy.
They don't die. So the little Bobby June, the little blonde-haired four-year-old that I'm looking for, is not dead. She is alive. Her body is dead at the time I do the reading, but little Bobby June is up in heaven playing ball with the other kids. So it's a matter of, I was getting the correct answer to the question. The missing person is alive, but because of my approach to the question, it wasn't doing me any good.
Right.
Yeah. So your questioning is really, really, really key. And once I learned that, it went a lot better.
Now, when you're dealing with, say it's a, you know, alien sort of presence or entity, does that feel any different? Like, are you getting, how would you know if you're sort of talking to a spirit and you're getting answers that way, or if you're talking to like this separate entity? Is it a similar sort of, I don't know, feeling in your brain, the same sort of thoughts, or is it different?
For me, no. I don't have any different feeling.
No.
Sometimes when you're in contact with the spirit, I have had incredibly emotional experiences, but not primarily with the dowsing. Dowsing is pretty mechanical. Mm-hmm. And it's very
it's technical.
Technical, yeah. And time consuming.
Yes, technical.
Because you have to ask yes or no question. You can't say, is the missing person blonde or brunette?
Right.
Is the missing person blonde? Yes or no. Missing person brunette? Yes or no. It's very time consuming. But I like it because it's very accurate. The people I work with have done a lot of work with the authorities. And the trouble with a lot of psychic work is they can provide a very specific information. For example, I had a case where one of the psychics described where the missing person was, down to the nth detail. It's very, very specific. The problem is that location fit about 100,000 different places, you know, in Arizona. You know, yeah. It's like, well, the person, there's a trail there, and there's a road, and there's a mountain in the background, and I can see a tree with a carving on it, and there's a fence, and there's a house, and there's a sign that says posted. Well, how many places in America does that describe?
but so general, yeah, but at the same time.
One of the benefits of dowsing with the pendulum, I can get latitude and longitude.
Oh.
I can get street, you know, I can get street addresses. I have gotten different floors on a building at a street address. Just by a process of illumination, asking question after question after question after question.
How did you get into it with Lindsay? So she kind of calls you and says that she's having these experiences.
And that's George's fault.
Right. Yeah. And then you get the pendulum involved. Where do you start with those questions? Like, it's not like is this person alive or dead? It's got to be different questions to sort of explode the UFO.
Well, that's
right.
Again, that's what the book's all about, is we explore that whole process because it was fascinating. We had no idea what to expect, nor really did Lindsay. And once we got into the investigation, principally with the pendulum, it took on a life of its own. And we learned so much about what truly has been going on with Lindsay. And at the end of about 2 years of research, she was tremendously relieved because there was a lot of anxiety and a lot of physical discomfort, particularly in her early years, with these regular contacts. But it turns out that 6,000 years ago on a different plane, the leading, I'll say, entity in charge of whatever was happening that involved Lindsay, he invited her to participate in this long-term process, and she agreed to do so. And she was asked to do so because of her human ability to reincarnate. Apparently, that was an important factor in this particular process. So once Lindsay learned that, oh, I agreed to do this, oh, well, okay, of course I will do it. I said I would. But if we're going to continue this, let's not have any pain or discomfort associated with it.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, I would have thought they would have thought about that.
Yeah, after that, she did have some encounters, but there was absolutely no pain or discomfort associated with in previous years. It had often been very, very painful and very discomforting.
Did you happen to ask why they didn't come up with that compromise like 3,000 years ago?
At least 3,000.
Well, yeah. One of the things we came across is they didn't realize they don't know what pain is.
Oh.
They weren't familiar with pain. Mm-hmm. As soon as they found out that it was causing discomfort, oh, well, we can take care of that.
There was a lot of two-way learning in this process, so it was a fascinating adventure.
That's a long time to find that out.
You would have thought that, like, I mean, that's a lot of politeness, you know, to not mention that you're in pain for
But also, why can't they obviously can't remember that they've made this contract or deal or whatever. Maybe let them know that before. Let them remember that this happened so they're not so scared. So for so long in that lifetime.
There you go, like a video or something. Like what? Like,
guys.
We can't address that. We don't know what's in their.
I'm
their
just
mindset.
Venting. It's fine. It's not you, know. You.
We've got a lot of suggestions.
Well, if again, we're not bragging, but if Lindsay had not come in contact with us, she would still be experiencing pain.
Yeah.
And it's not because we were so special. It just, I think this was all nudged by the spirit world. I think we were all put together. George and I working together, and then all of a sudden Lindsay comes in. I think we were put together from the other side, and part of it was to help Lindsay, mm-hmm. One, end her pain, but also tell her story.
Mm-hmm. And her story was also made into a Netflix series, Haunted. First season, her story was episode 5. So her story got out big time, which is something that when she decided to come out with a story, it did come out. It did come out hugely.
Yeah, in a big way.
Yeah.
George and I think it's our opinion that this thing was stage managed so that Lindsay would come out, so that she would encourage other people who are undergoing the same thing. It's okay to come out now. You're not alone. There's nothing to be afraid of. There's some people out there for support. People need to hear what you're going through because they're going through the same thing. And I think, again, I think this was arranged from the spirit side, but it brought everything together to get that message out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got Lindsay who's going through everything. You have, you know, someone who is not only prolific in writing, but also in the pendulum, and then someone who has had exposure through MUFON and also counseling.
Mm-hmm.
Like how that whole thing fit together. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Now, quick aside, for many years there, when I was officially involved with MUFON as the assistant state director in Louisiana, I had an opportunity to meet with a number of people, primarily in Northwest Louisiana, who had had some sort of encounter or experience. And there was some publicity with my position with MUFON locally, and kind of the word got out, this may be a guy you can talk to. And I was able to, and again, my background as a counselor, I got confidentiality, so I have very confidential ears, and got to listen to a number of people with some remarkable encounters. Dan was living in Shreveport at the time and often accompanied me. And so we would have my impressions of what the person is describing. Dan would have his impressions. We would write up our notes, and invariably we're both receiving the same message. And that kind of gave, at least in my position, interpretation, some credibility to the stories these people were telling, because they were also very much aligned with what was out in the general, if you will, UFO abduction research literature. That's kind of how this got together. And of course, when Lindsay gave me that call one night, okay, and she's really, really wanting to know what the hell's going on. And it just started clicking, and it was quite the amazing process.
Were these abductions focused in one area, like they said in that Netflix episode, or was it just a lot everywhere?
We don't know the whole scope. I think it was the parts that she was most concerned with were associated with very pronounced abdominal pain, going back to when she was like 9-10 years old. And
oh no, I mean like the other, what we call them, invitations, not abductions, the other alien invitations from other people. They mentioned that there were many, many people with the same experience,
like in the area of Shreveport, right?
Right. That's what it said in the show. And I was wondering if that was like part of it, or if it was just, it was spread out.
I think abductions are pretty much, you know, what do you say? What's your term? Invitations?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great term. No, let's start using that.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's pretty universal.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought that was a weird detail. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love this idea, by the way, of talking about these things, because so many more people come forward with their paranormal experiences or their invitation stories or whatever they're seeing and whatever they're mm-hmm. feeling yeah. and finding a community, which, y'all know is so very important to not feel alone, not feel crazy, not feel mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and process through some of that stuff. I mean, everybody absolutely. That we've talked to has said it's just your whole reality shifts.
Well, yeah, I think that's really the focus behind all of this. Mm-hmm. Again, we were not manipulated, but we were definitely nudged in this direction. And I think the whole focus was to get that message out that you folks are out there who are going through this are not alone.
Yeah, I think it's a big part of both of your purposes here. You're mm-hmm. helping a lot of people. I think that's amazing.
I love the similarity too. I just cannot help but love the similarity in between, the counseling for addictions and then also, in a different way, counseling for what these people have been through because, mm-hmm. That just speaks to me. I like it.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I noticed when I was doing, I was George's objective observer when he did his reports, these people weren't interested in getting headlines.
No, right.
They weren't interested in publicity. In fact, a lot of them, that was the last thing they wanted. Mm-hmm. But they wanted to know, something's happening out here. Can you tell me talking to George, can you tell me what's going on? I want to talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. But they were not seeking publicity or fame or fortune. They just they wanted answers.
Yeah, well, even more than answers, they wanted somebody to tell their story to. I mean, who do you go to? And most of them, they couldn't go to their pastor.
No.
Family members are probably ruined out. You ain't going to talk to the police, and your doctor's probably going to get a little suspicious if you talk to him or her. Mm-hmm. So when the word got out that, there are people who are familiar with this subject who aren't respecting confidentiality.
And taking them seriously.
Mm-hmm. Very, yeah. And mm-hmm. now taking them seriously, I was able to convey to many of them that I take it seriously because I have heard a very similar story from so many other people in different times and different locations. So the consistency there does a great deal, in my personal opinion, to validate what they're describing.
Now, did Lindsay get into some of her past lives? Has she gleaned any sort of information about what she was up to 1,000 years ago, 200 years ago?
Well, actually, again, we're not heading in that direction, mm-hmm. but in the course of the investigation, we did learn that in Lindsay's most recent incarnation, and with the pendulum, we were able to set up a dialogue with Lindsay now in the flesh, conversing with the spirit of Lindsay from her previous incarnation. If you can get your head wrapped around that.
Yeah, I'll try.
Barely.
And what she wanted to know was in her previous life, did she have the same encounters and experiences with the ETs? And the answer was, oh, yes. And that's when we started learning that, no, this has been going on a very long time.
And it had to have been every lifetime that she reincarnated, right?
That seems to be the case. A greater or lesser involvement, but it appears to have been continuous.
Oh, that is just fascinating.
Yeah, we could have gone very, very much into the past life. That would have been a whole book by itself. Yeah, had to stay focused, on the temptation to go off on the sidetracks was constant. We had to keep focused.
You're going to need to write a few more books, you guys.
Because we need some answers now.
Well, now that you mention it.
Yes. Do tell.
This morning, George and I outlined the 10 chapters of the next book, so we'll keep you posted.
Yes.
There's another one in the works right now.
Oh, fantastic. Now, is this the one that you had mentioned earlier? Or is there another, just of this series in this particular instance? Because there was one that was brought up, George, you had brought up the one, Sky People and Our Ancestors.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. That's the one we're currently working on, and it was specifically sparked by the previous book with an episode of Lindsay in a previous lifetime at a certain location where she was in a position to interact with the sky people, as they were called then. And then that led us to, okay,
yep,
we need to find out who are sky people and how are they interacting with our ancestors. And boom, that got rocking and rolling right off the bat.
But again, I think there's a chapter in the current book of Paranormal Pendulum 3 called the Stage Manager. And it's about a specific spirit that was doing the primary nudging to get this book. I think she's nudging us a little further.
I don't think there's any thinking about it.
I think the nudging continues.
Oh, that is great. Why don't we get into that after our break?
My favorite spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity that you get. That, wow, how have I been living like this feeling? It's kind of like when you find out that you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for just $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. Wow, how have I been affording this? It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. The quality that I've received from Mint Mobile is second to none, and I've tried them all. And this is an amazing company to work with that actually cares about their clients and the prices that they charge. So if you're on that fence wondering, should I make the shift? You're going to get great coverage, you're going to get great customer service, and all of the bells and whistles you expect from the bigger brand names. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans and their jaw-dropping monthly bills and unexpected overages. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at just $15 a month. So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/P60. That's mintmobile.com/P60. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/P60. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to just $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Hello, my little darklings. If you're anything like me, you sign up for things and forget about them. You commit to things and never go back to cancel those things once you've tested them or tried them out. And those things can weigh on you, man. They can just keep bleeding you dry dollars at a time, and you don't even notice. Well, that's why I decided to take back control of my money, and I reached out to Rocket Money. I found subscriptions I had forgotten about, and on some of them, I was paying 2 or 3 times, and I didn't know what to do. But Rocket Money sure did. They stepped right in. Did you know that nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about? So before I started using Rocket Money, I thought I had maybe about 10 to 12 subscriptions out there, and I couldn't believe it when they showed me what I was paying for. I was paying over 22 different subscriptions each month, most of which I wasn't even using or remembered signing up for. So between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it's never ending. But thanks to Rocket Money, I'm no longer wasting money on the ones I forgot about. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved up to a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/P60. That's right. Take control of your financial future. rocketmoney.com/P60. rocketmoney.com/P60.
All right. So the sky people and the ancients, because in my brain, that sounds like we're talking about like ancient aliens and building temples.
We're talking
and
about
all
ancient,
that sort of
ancient,
stuff.
Ancient people. Because what got How our ancient? Attention? What got our attention is, if you look at just about any ancient civilization around the world, they almost uniformly have remembrances of their ancestors and their relationship to the sky people, or sometimes they would call them the star people. And that's what really got our attention, that this was pretty much a universal description of our ancient ancestors having some sort of interactions with sky people or star people. And, well, we've got the pendulum. We got some momentum. Let's go find out what this is all about. And that's kind of what we're doing.
Yeah, we're taking kind of a what I think is a interesting approach. George lives in the area of the mound builder cultures, the ancient high cultures of mound builders. I'm out here in cliff dweller land. So we're investigating two entirely different cultures and asking the same questions and seeing if they're meeting, you know, if the sky people are pretty much the same over there as they are over here.
And what are the results so far?
So far, they're the same people.
Yeah, I figured.
Yeah,
okay, let me point this out. On the new book, because this is so universal, we are limiting our research to two very specific areas, roughly the mound builder area and roughly the cliff dwelling area, because otherwise we could spend the rest of our lives in research and never finish the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so far, the results are pretty much across the board the same.
Yeah. And also add to that is we're also taking these selective sites, but in a huge time span.
Yeah.
Like one of the primary sites is called Poverty Point in Northeast Louisiana. That is one of the earliest inhabited sites. Archaeologists are aware. They're saying that it was very active 4,000 years ago. Our research takes it back a little further, but we come in with the importance of that particular location. Why the people there built this huge bird effigy mound that still exists. And there was quite a story there. And we go to another site in a different time frame, and we get some very similar things. At Poverty Point, there was a certain priest that we were able to make acquaintance with. And one of his functions for the village was he was the liaison with the sky people.
Oh.
And that played out as a similar theme in these other villages in different time frames. And out west, Dan found very similar occurrences. So there's a consistency to this interaction with the sky people and our ancestors. And we're kind of looking at, well, who are the sky people? What are they interacting with? And we're getting a picture that neither one of us expected. It's really kind of, whoa, hello.
Yeah.
But it sure makes a lot of sense.
One another interesting thing that we're running into, the area and the mound builders that George is investigating, is large clusters of people, you know, towns, villages, because you know that's the way it was back here. The area that the one specific area that I'm investigating is scattered people. I mean, there'll be like one family in one canyon, one family in the next canyon, two family in canyons over. Three families over this canyon, one family over that canyon. So very widely scattered, completely opposite living styles and of course, different cultures. But we're coming up with the same description of the sky people and how they interacted, how they arrived, what they did, what they didn't do, that sort of thing, which is real interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking really varied cultures and really varied living styles with the same interactions.
Yeah, totally unexpected. Totally unexpected.
So as far as timing goes, I mean, you know, we say kind of like these thousands of years ago, and, you know, I'm terrible with dates, so I don't remember which culture was around when. So are we talking about like precursors to, say, like the Anasazi?
The area that, just for reference, it's not the Anasazi, but the area that I'm investigating is roughly the same time frame.
Okay. All right.
Very much the same time. Very much.
Okay. All right. So
Poverty Point goes way, way, way. Is that the same time frame? But it also goes way, 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 way back.
Yeah. And What we've learned is that initial population that developed Poverty Point, they pretty much left the area en masse after about 1,000 years, and the area was unused, almost desolate for quite some time. And then another group moved in and started utilizing what the remains of the previous civilization were. And that apparently is where the current archaeological record picks up.
Okay. So there were people there prior to anything that we even really knew about.
Yeah, that's what we're getting. That's what we're getting.
Yeah, something, what George and I are reporting is what we're reporting. It's information we are gathered from other people. We're doing with them what you guys are doing with us. Mm-hmm. And we're passing along what they tell us. And we're not holding anything back. If we come across something that flies in the face of traditional belief, well, we're not going to edit it.
No.
This is what we've come up with. If we're proven wrong, we'll change it. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to edit anything. This is what they tell us, and this is what we're passing along. And you guys, believe it or not.
Yeah, and we don't have an agenda. We're not trying to promote anything one way or the other. It's just, for whatever reasons, using the pendulum as a communication device. We're able to access just a wealth of information on so many topics, so many subjects.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, I would get sidetracked so many times. I'm like, what was life like? Like, what kind of pets did you have?
What kind of pets did they have, you guys?
Seriously.
Dogs.
Okay.
Oh, that makes sense. I was hoping dragons or something. I don't know. Now, that's interesting, too. Have you had any sort of, like, ideas on getting sort of, like, the sky people's sort of take on any of the paranormal stuff that happens that, like, cryptids? Or do they have any sort of, have you ever thought about doing anything like that? Says the girl who
we haven't received any nudging in that direction, so we pretty much stayed away from it.
Okay. I'm going to need another book after this book.
Working
on it. Would you guys go ahead and explore that?
I will go camping up in Sasquatch country and let you know what happens.
Thank
How
you.
How about that?
Thank you.
That's what we need. Thank you.
We could go so far off in so many directions, we never would have finished the first chapter, much less the whole book.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't even imagine trying to stay focused with this.
Frankly, it is a very disciplined process. And both of us have written enough through the years and have had to focus on deadlines and content that we kind of had the skill set to be able to do that.
I don't have that skill set.
No, trust me, I'm not comfortable with this. Don't ever ask us to investigate anything. We will end up in Kansas at a petting zoo. And who knows? Eating cheese.
Well, I mean, we could be investigating an archaeological site and all of a sudden find ourselves investigating paranormal spirit world contact at that site. And, all of a sudden you find yourself away from the UFO thing into the spirit world thing.
Oh, wow.
And everything's connected. They all overlap.
And in the current book, the spirit world and the UFO world, it's all connected.
Expand on that, please, because I love that.
Well, again, it goes back to the nudging. The spirit world is actually the guiding force behind this. And then investigating it, we came across a number of spirits who were either directly or indirectly involved with Lindsay's case, not necessarily directly involved with the UFO aspect.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Tell them about WD.
Tell us.
Yes, please. We would like to hear this.
We have a pal on the other side.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, one of the things we wanted to start with Lindsay, again, her first memory, her first actual memory, not something she was told, but she has it as a personal memory when she was around 3 years old. And at that time, her family, who are restaurateurs, they had converted a former train station in Shreveport into a really nice upscale restaurant. It was really cool. I went to it a couple of times. And little three-year-old Lindsay during the day when the restaurant was in operation, she would be upstairs on the second floor of this former train station in her room. She had things to play with and whatnot, but she also had a couple of windows. Now, in this train station, these are windows that go from the floor almost to the ceiling. These are big, heavy-duty windows. And apparently she was just kind of looking out, and it was all sunny and nice out there, and she wanted to go outside and play.
As well, every child does.
I don't blame her.
Yeah.
Well, sometime later, a couple was walking down the street from the parking lot going into the restaurant, and they looked up and happened to see this little toddler crawling around the balcony. Well, they went inside and alerted her father and her mother that, there's this child out there. They ran up to the room, and the window is open.
Mm-hmm.
They go out and bring Lindsay back in, close the window. God. There's nobody upstairs on the second floor. I mean, there's no way that window got open, and, of course, Lindsay could not have opened it. So absolutely perplexed, her father just had, well, how did you get out there? And said, oh, well, my friend raised the window for me.
Okay, that's not terrifying.
And she called the friend Morlock. To this day, she doesn't know why she called this spirit friend Morlock, but
it's
Morlock,
a pretty cool name.
Yeah, Morlock opened the window for her. And
and made sure she wasn't going to fall off.
Yeah. I mean, it was totally protective, but it was obviously a little disconcerting for her father.
Yeah.
Years later, later in Lindsay's life, as a part of our investigation with Lindsay, we're going to, Dan was in town, and we went to that location, which was pretty much closed down, but said, well, we're downtown. Let's go by the old station and just take out the pendulum and see if we can find anything about Lindsay's experience way back when. So I asked her, are there any spirits here? And Dan's got the pendulum. Yes. Ooh. Is the spirit that Lindsay called Morlock present? Yes. Ooh. And then I kind of summarized Lindsay's story as she told us. And I said, well, is this fairly accurate? Yes. Okay. Dan and I were going to visit the oldest cemetery in Shreveport, Louisiana, Oakland Cemetery, that very afternoon. And so I asked Morlock, well, by chance, are you buried in the cemetery? Yes. Would you be willing to guide us to your burial plot? Yes. Okay. So that afternoon arrives. Dan and I are over in Oakland Cemetery, and starts asking, well, is your gravesite to the north? No. Should we go to the west? Yes. Should we go to the west 20 feet? Yes. And just
process of elimination.
Yeah, process of elimination. Eventually, we're led to a small family plot. W.D. Woodworth, his wife, and his son are there. And, okay, W.D. Woodworth, is there a reason for this? And what it turns out that W.D. Woodworth is a spirit that has been with Lindsay much of her life, that in fact he was that spirit who raised the window for her. And we were able to have many conversations with W.D. He loves to talk, by the way. And it turns out he was quite the character. In fact, there were many, many instances in local newspapers back in the late 19th, early 20th century where W.D. would post a notice in the newspaper alerting merchants in Shreveport, do not accept purchases by my wife on credit. I won't pay it. Stuff like that. And she, in turn, would post little notices in the newspaper. Don't give my husband whiskey. Little back and forth like that really gave some personality.
I love that whole vibe. Characters. Let's just seriously air out our dirty laundry in the newspaper. Let's
they
do
were
it.
Doing social media before social media.
Yeah, and what I was also able to retrieve, you know, from the archives, the actual newspaper. So we got it in print.
Nice.
So, that's so good.
That's the beauty thing. Whenever we come up with something by the pendulum, in many cases, we can validate that with some totally objective information, whether it's in print or whatever. So a lot of what we come up with, we do have secondary validation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're big on validation.
I personally.
Yeah, well, one of the techniques we use, we work with a couple of mediums who are very, very talented. And we've done several sessions where the medium will ask a question, and so they get the medium's response, my response, what doing the pendulum, George's response doing the pendulum. And to make sure that the medium isn't watching my pendulum or his pendulum, or I'm not watching her body language, or George is not watching her body language, George and I will face back to back. The medium will face away from us, and we'll have somebody else asking the question. So there's no way that either one of us can affect the other's answer, you know, by observation. Mm-hmm. And consistently, we still come up with the same answers.
Yeah, and kind of taking that a step further, as we were having more and more sessions, and this is becoming kind of the norm, if you will, in our sessions, is we'll have the mediums who are describing what they're seeing, which is incredible. Oh, it's incredible. And we'll have, in many cases, we'll have two mediums. They're both exceedingly talented, and they're echoing each other. Okay, so they're both seeing the same occurrence. Sometimes one will see a little bit more than the other, and they'll point something out. But at the end of the table, we have a fellow who is a very experienced pendulum dowser. And all he's doing is holding the pendulum, and I'm watching the swing of the pendulum regarding to what these two mediums are talking about. And invariably, it's swinging positive. Yes, yes, what they're describing is true. It is accurate. And there was only one instance that I can recall where they were conversing and the pendulum, it just kind of hung there. So there was something a little funny about the way they were describing it. So I call that to their attention. They kind of went back, let's start over. And the pendulum got back to spinning. Yes. Okay. Now they got it right.
Nice.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's a way of getting confirmation without having to ask questions.
Yeah.
Basically, the higher power is going, yeah, they're right. Yeah, they're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're right. They're right. They're on it. They're on it. Or, get them back on track. Get them back on track. But generally, you know, if you're getting a constant right spin, that's the universe just telling you, yeah, they're doing good. They're doing good. Keep it up. But anyway, the point is we try to verify as much as possible, mm-hmm. as many ways as possible as we can.
You know, I know Lindsay had, this sort of spirit presence and then also had the multiple invitations. But have you ever noticed if people who have some experience with UFOs or with aliens, if that makes them more likely to have sort of the spirit experience as well? Or do you think it was just a one-off in Lindsay's case?
I don't think any UFO experience is a one-off. That certainly wasn't the case. Certainly wasn't the case with Lindsay and other individuals I've talked through the years. There was often, and Dan can attest to this, when they're describing their experiences, they almost speak of it as something personal to them or for them. Mm-hmm. And that was at first a little okay. But the more I heard that and things were crouched in these very personal terms, the less I had to, you know, these are like abductions, you know, so some sort of criminal act at random. Well, apparently these things are not random. These experiences I just don't see as being random.
Yeah, the only spirit contact that we know of is through Lindsay. But that's the only major case involved. The spirits were definitely involved. I mean, the whole thing was set up on the spirit world side, on their side, and that definitely was a key factor in Lindsay's case. It may be in other cases, but we've only investigated, you know, Lindsay, so we can't.
Okay.
Speak to it.
Oh, okay.
I wouldn't be surprised, but I think Lindsay is a special case. mm-hmm. I think the spirit world put that together and made it a special case.
Because it's just something that popped into my head.
That, yeah, no, I wouldn't be surprised.
I've never heard anything about it, but if those two things happen often, you know, if they co-occur often, or if it was just every so often.
Yeah, I do a lot of reading in the subject in the field. And that's why a lot of what Lynn's experienced and what we've seen does match up with what other researchers and experiencers are reporting.
So usually an invitee, they've put this into place. It's been in place for lifetimes. Is that just Lindsay's case?
That original agreement.
Yeah, the agreement, yeah.
Well, I have to say, yeah, we've only investigated Lindsay's case, so that's the only one we can expect. That's the only one we can speak to from direct experience.
Right.
Everything else would have to be anecdotal.
Got it.
But based on the other individuals in the past that we've talked to who felt a real personal connection or a personal mm-hmm. reason for the experience, that kind of leads me to think that what we've seen with Lindsay may be more common.
Right. Okay, I gotcha.
Right. Because I feel like that's a common thread. People, once they get over the shock and start to understand, they're like, oh, yeah, we knew this was mm-hmm. going to be happening.
Okay.
Yeah, well, yeah, one of the things, yeah, again, that I was investigating out here, I was asking about the UFOs arriving at the sites, and they kept saying, yeah, it happens all the time. It was no big deal. It wasn't like a train schedule that they came in every Thursday at 4 o'clock, but they would show up, and it was just, you know, they're back, you know, and the shaman or the chief would go out and visit with them. So it's been going on for thousands of years.
Yeah.
Hanging out and looking at their watches, waiting for it to come down.
I
like that image.
Yeah. The sundial. Yeah.
There is sundial. It's a new thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen these around.
Yeah.
Well, something interesting we both came across in our research was that the sky people and the human beings down here engaged in trade.
Oh, what did they trade?
Well, this
and
is
the trade,
interesting.
What threw us was not the they weren't trading implements. You know, they weren't trading a ray gun for a flint axe. They were trading ideas. Ideas.
Oh, ideas. Ideas could we have possibly?
What kind of?
We think, yeah. What we've come across is they're interested in emotions. They're not sure. It's like Lindsay with the pain.
With the pain.
They didn't know what pain was. They're trying to find out what emotions are, and so they're trading ideas about emotion.
And conversely, they're presenting ways to live on Earth more successfully as a community.
So they're not trading. It's not like, you know, the Wild West where they're trading blankets and guns and bullets. They're trading concepts.
Both sides
have something of equal value. Mm-hmm. It's not these advanced people and the primitives. It's, you know, it's two people that have two groups that have valuable information that they can trade to each other.
Both very advanced and separate.
And that threw me for
crazy.
A loop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, that is mind blowing, especially with the pain thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I need to trade and learn about human emotions.
I'm trying to teach you. I'm trying.
I know.
I'm trying
You're
so
doing
hard.
A good job.
Oh. You bring me gifts. I teach you about emotions.
It's a good trade-off. What were the people getting in the trade from the visitors?
How to live more successfully.
Oh.
Yeah.
How to be better
Georgia,
at
they were,
this.
You know, probably you know, medicine, hygiene,
social organization, agriculture, water access, anger management.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, and on the other side, they were trying to, you know, tell me about this stuff called love. What? How do you do that? How do you get it? What is it? You know, what does it taste like? You know, so they're trading valuable information. It's you know, it's of equal value to both sides. It's just different things.
Oh my God, Tressa, it is us.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you make our again, logos and tech.
Yeah. We're getting that across the board.
Yeah.
Across the board. So.
Wow.
Yeah,
that is so cool.
I have never heard that before. That is blowing my mind.
Yeah, seriously.
Our motto is kind of becoming that our past does not look like we think it does.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah. I like that a lot. I'm sending another book, too. That's the title.
Jenny, that's smart. Let's write that instead. Don't tell
me. We're working on it. We'll let you know.
That's our title. We already started it. That's our title. We're taking it back.
Every bit of information we have, we think we've learned something, and we have, but it opens up another door.
Oh, right, man. Right.
You know, it's like,
seriously.
Thank you for the knowledge, but now I have 50 more questions.
Now I've got
more.
But how exciting is that? Oh, that is so exciting.
Very.
Yeah.
Very.
Oh, my goodness. I love that. I love that feeling where your brain makes a connection and then you go, there's so many things.
Oh,
that's
hell,
what
I gotta
does.
Go to Utah and camp out for a week. Oh, no. For me. Yeah.
Listen, guys, I was hoping that before we let you go, you could kind of, because now you've said that there's nothing extra special about the actual pendulum and that it's more so the skill of quieting the mind. Could you give Tressa and I just a brief rundown of what we might need, what sort of tool we might need, and just the process by which you start to calm down or quiet down in order to start doing this?
It's very basic. You're probably doing most of it already, but you need a weight on a string, and it doesn't matter. I mean, it can be wood, it can be plastic, it can be stone, it can be, you know, whatever weighs something. And the string can be a string or leather, metal. It doesn't matter. It's a tool. That's all it is. And keep that in mind. And remember, it's a yes or no process. And the key to it is keeping your mind absolutely clear so that your subconscious directs it so that you don't get the answer that you want. You get the answer that you need. And my process is basic. I go into a room, shut the door, dim down the lights, close the blinds, play soft, usually new age music because you don't get lost in the melody. You know, you don't want to try to douse to the anvil chorus. It just, you know, so keep it quiet. And basically, you know, that's just to kind of give you a quiet atmosphere. There's nothing mystical about that. You know, you can light a candle if you want to, a pleasant scent. What you want is a quiet, comfortable environment and to do your work. And I meditate usually for 10 to 15 minutes. If I'm working like a missing person case, I might meditate on that person. Or generally just meditate on Om or whatever your mantra, whatever, just to get yourself calmed down and get your conscious mind out of the situation as much as possible so that you can work with your subconscious mind. And then you just start asking questions. It's a very simple process.
It's
simple, but the hard part is keeping your mind focused, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, that sounds hard.
Well, there's a discipline to it.
There's a discipline
exactly.
To it.
It's something you have to practice.
Mm-hmm. If you practice, you'll master it. Mm-hmm.
So you could start off with like maybe just practicing meditation.
I think meditation is key. Meditation is key. Not only for pain and dowsing, just for life, for living.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you there. Meditation is enormously helpful.
Yeah, but yeah, if you do that and you can do it, you can pick it up again. I've got several books on the subject. It's quite simple. The technique is simple. Again, the mental mastery is the only hard part, and you can handle that with practice.
Yeah.
The one thing, don't overdo it. I've seen people overdo the pendulum because, you know.
What happens then?
Well, you'll see them at the grocery store, you know. Is this watermelon? I'm not joking, you know. Is this melon ripe, you know? Should I get thump,
thump, thump? Settle down, you guys.
No, I've seen it happen.
One, yeah. I think that's a whole new avenue for, you know, trailers and content, social content that Tressa and I can now do.
Yeah, well.
First of all.
I'll write a book, Dowsing with Melons. Dowsing the grocery store.
Let me write that down.
Yeah. Yep.
But any question you have, you can douse. If you do medical stuff, which I've done some, it's okay to dowsing for medical problems, but check with your doctor. Absolutely.
Okay.
Don't self-medicate, self-diagnose.
Right. Of course.
But you know, if you do dowsing and your pendulum says that you got a problem in your right side, you know, don't do a self appendectomy. Go to your doctor.
Okay. No, don't write that down too. Don't perform.
No self appendectomy.
Got it. Yeah. Got it. Right. Thank you.
Learning life lessons.
You guys, it was such a pleasure to have you on, but we are out of time.
Oh, what a hoot.
Do you have some stuff you want to let people know about right now? And we'll put everything in the show notes so they can check that out later.
Well, we'll start with me. My website's www.fournightspress.com. That's FOURKNIGHTS, Four Nights Press. www.danbaldwin.com. And my email address is in both websites. I have, my dowsing books are the Practical Pendulum, the Paranormal Pendulum, Paranormal Pendulum 2, Paranormal Pendulum 3. I've written a book on psychic detecting called Find Me. I've got another one called They Are Not Yet Lost, about finding missing persons. And another one about, I call it the Psychic Detective Guidebook.
Oh, nice.
So. Those are all available in ebook and paperback wherever you order your stuff.
Fantastic.
Wherever you order your books.
What about you, George? What do you got for us?
Oh, best way to get more information about yours truly, just go to my website, www.georgeesewell. Be sure you get that middle initial E. Otherwise, you'll go visit with some artist in New York City. Nice guy, I'm told, but he ain't me. But on the site, yes, the various books I've written, you can access to how you can acquire them. The signature book is called Habits, Patterns, and Thoughts That Go Bump in the Night. And that is kind of a collection of what I learned and practiced during all of my counseling years and working with people, learning how to manage change. Ooh. And it's a fun read. It's a fun read.
I've stolen from it before. So
it's worthy of theft.
It's worthy of theft. Yeah.
That's my favorite really. Kind of book. Yeah. Everybody else, thank you so much for joining us. Check out their stuff in the show notes. Go rate, subscribe, and review and stuff. And we'll see you next week. Bye.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.